On this episode of Complicated Conversations, we welcome Neely Tubati Alexander. Neely is originally from the Seattle area and resides in Arizona with her husband and two elementary-aged children. If she's not tucked away writing, you can find her at some kiddo activity, drinking wine, or watching reality television, usually the last two together. She's the author of Love Buzz. Her sophomore novel, In a Not-So-Perfect World, is out now. Welcome to Pop Fiction Women, Neely. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm great. I'm excited to be here.
Good, good. So why don't you start by giving our listeners kind of the elevator pitch for your new novel?
Sure. So In a Not-So-Perfect World follows video game designer Sloane on a romantic escapade to an all-inclusive Turks and Caicos resort with her neighbor Charlie. She goes using the time away to work on landing her dream job at a top video game design company, but he's using her to make his ex jealous. So it has all my favorite tropes, like fake dating, one bed, forced proximity, and is a slow burn. So it's a tropical escape.
Yes. And it has some different elements than your debut, Love Buzz. Was that intentional or...
Yeah, to an extent. Love Buzz kind of towed the line between women's fiction and romance. And with this one, I really wanted to dive kind of fully into the rom-com space. And so I kind of went the exact opposite direction and had them together in a suite for the majority of the book. So it was really fun to be able to spend more time on the page with the two characters and have them interacting a lot more than in Love Buzz. But yeah, I really wanted to dive into that.
Cool.
Oh, I love it. And I love the dive into the full rom-com pool. So I want to start with Sloane. She, as you said, is sort of is a video gamer, but she's a doomsday prepper. And this gamer who is, as you mentioned, in the running for her dream job as a designer at like the best video game company. And she tells Charlie very early on, they're on the plane, that she is a multifaceted human, when he jokes that doomsday prep and apocalyptic gaming don't really go hand in hand with her love of romance novels. So these are clearly unique attributes. I read a lot in the rom-com and romance space. I feel like as a female main character, these are unique and I loved it. So tell me about your development of Sloane and this like gamer doomsday prepping aspect of her.
Yeah, well, I really wanted, like you said, to have something that wasn't necessarily always represented in the romance space. Mm-hmm. She's a pessimist. She's a doomsday planner. She's sort of always waiting for the other shoe to drop. And, you know, I dedicated the book to the pessimists. I would consider myself in that category as well. And so, you know, that's why we come to romance, is for that hopefulness. And I really wanted representation in STEM and just some areas within career that we don't always get to see. I think one thing that you will find with all of my books is that there is a strong component that has to do with career. And so that component for me in this book, I really wanted it to be an area that we don't necessarily see as typical, I suppose, you know, for romance heroines. So that was fun to explore and to do research around as well.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you. Did you have to do a lot of research on that? And how did you land on that particular career?
I did have to do a lot of research. I'm not necessarily a gamer, other than, you know, mobile games with my kids. But it was, you know, as I was doing the research, I found that the gaming industry is bigger than the music and film and TV industries combined. I mean, it's a huge, huge space that we don't really see a lot of representation around in pop culture. So I found that to be sort of a need. And seeing that statistic really made me want to explore it further.
That makes sense. Yeah. We want to talk about Charlie too. He is not your typical, maybe not your typical love male interest. He reads her romance novels. His walk-up song in college baseball was Taylor Swift, which we love. And he has the name of his unborn child already picked out, which, by the way, my husband did too. So I like that.
So maybe that's not unusual for men. I feel like it is, but apparently not.
Right from the start, we see that he is blown away by Sloane and her talent and her ambition and her passion for what she does. So tell us about your development of Charlie.
Sure. Well, he's been called a cinnamon roll, which I really enjoy. And I, you know, when you write romance, it's always a balance to include someone that readers will feel is attractive and sexy and, you know, that you would sort of potentially lust over, but then also, you know, wanting to have a good representation of healthy relationships and healthy people. And, you know, that's always a bit of a balance. And so for Charlie, he to me was always going to be sort of this counter to her pessimism and her kind of doomsday view of the world. So it is a bit of Grumpy Sunshine as well in that respect, where he really evolved as the counter to who Sloan is, which makes for a really nice balance, I think, of why they would work as a potential relationship.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. And I love that he not only reads the romance novel because, you know, she happened to have it with him, but he is a romance novel reader. I mean, that is, he's like, oh, yes, I have many of those. And one of the reasons he didn't think it would work with his ex was that she didn't read enough books. So I love that part. And how you managed to work in one of the hottest scenes involves him reading a scene from a romance novel. I'm like, where, this is a dream I didn't know I had. And now that's going, maybe that's not everyone's fantasy, but I got to tell you, for the bookworm, that was off the charts. Thank you very much for that.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, a little bit of pandering to the reading community and that one.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's where we're here, you know? So you said, we've talked about Sloan is always prepared, but she never really feels safe until she meets Charlie. And with them, you explore a theme that I love and really resonates with me, which is this idea of being seen plus feeling safe, and how that combination really allows her to become more authentically herself. And you write, I know he sees me, that there is no need to try to be a more perfect version of myself to impress him, but he is already impressed. I know that at first pass, I'd be inclined to say he changed me. But if I really look, I know that's not true. He didn't change me. He made me more deeply who I am and have been afraid to be. I just love that. I believe that wholeheartedly. Yes. And you captured it perfectly. I could not have written or said that better myself. So tell me about more about the dynamic between them and the growth that like their dynamic allows her to have.
Yeah, I think this also goes back to the idea of, you know, healthy relationships and mm-hmm. sort of what does that look like and the exploration of that. You know, there's lust and there's sort of a physical connection, and then there's what does this person actually do for me in my life, mm-hmm. And do they make me better? And I think we're oftentimes kind of made to believe in pop culture and in, you know, movies and TV that this person changes you, but mm-hmm. I think love really more is about making someone more, like the line says, making someone more profoundly who they are and giving them a safe place to be able to be that person without fear of, you know, of judgment or, you know, that they can more confidently go out into the world as who they genuinely are. I think that to me is more impactful and powerful when it comes to relationships and what a partner can give someone. So, yeah, I love that line as well. And I think that was a big component of what I wanted to explore in their relationship, was how they both made each other not better, but more capable of being who they actually are.
Yeah.
It's something I've been trying to articulate for so long, and you do it so well in this. It's like, I don't know, like the way I give my husband credit for so much of what I've done, but he hasn't done anything. Yeah. But there is something about the safety and the support and the who he is as my partner that allows me to do more than I could have ever done without him.
Yeah.
Which brings me to my next question, and is something we don't see articulated in the way you do it here. Sloan knows what she wants to do. She has confidence and talent, you know, in spades, and she's keeping him at bay because she wants this job and she wants to do well. And she sees him as an obstacle to that, as opposed to being successful at her job and having a relationship. That's part of her arc. Tell me about why you wanted to explore that and kind of maybe disavow us of this idea that you have to choose one or the other.
Yeah, I love this question. And like I said, I think this will always be a theme to some extent in my novels, in terms of, you know, there's always this idea swirling for women, I think in particular, of this idea of having it all. And what does that actually mean? And it's this sort of elusive thing that we're always trying to achieve, but don't really know what it is, if we've achieved it or how to achieve it, or, you know, what it actually looks like in reality. And oftentimes the women that we look at and say they have achieved this are in some way, you know, struggling or miserable because it is exhausting to quote unquote have it all, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, this idea of kind of thinking about society also kind of tells us that we have to choose oftentimes. And sometimes that's pressure we put on ourselves as women. Sometimes that is truly kind of what we experience out in the world. But this idea of having to choose between career and family, or having to choose between being able to like aggressively move up in your career or take time to have children, it does feel like it has to be a choice sometimes. And in the book, it's more blatantly a choice, but oftentimes it's subtly a choice for women. And it's something that I've experienced as well. And we often feel like we have to take a step back in our careers if we choose to start a family or have kids. And so, you know, I think this is an area that a lot of women who work and even if you're not in a career and are staying at home, we always have to find that balance. And it's always a moving target.
Yeah. And I think I was just talking to Kate about this. It's like a high wire act. You're constantly, and to your point that you just said, it is a lot about pressure because we feel like we have to do it all and do it all perfectly. No mistakes, no slip ups, because then you feel like you're going to be the poster child for, see, can't do it.
Yeah. And they don't know each other very long in this, but I love that the first thing and the strongest thing that attracts him to her is her ambition and is her career. And he wants it as much as she does. So, and not in a patronizing way, he's just like, you're awesome. You should do this. Like, and I'm not going to get in your way. And there was like an extreme obstacle here in that the, A-holy video game bosses, male bosses, were like, you may not have a relationship outside of this. So that, but I have the sense that Charlie would have, no matter what, if he thought he was getting in the way of her ambition and her dreams, would have stepped aside. And that's what makes him super dreamy, not just his abs, which also are super dreamy. But I love that. I love that that's what, you know, is the foundation for him. Principally of his attraction to her.
And we often, I think, we view men as attractive or sexy when they have, you know, career goals and are motivated and are achieving. And we don't give women oftentimes that same credit and view it in the same way for women. Sometimes it's viewed as a detriment in women and not sexy and powerful and attractive. So it was really, I think, cathartic, quite frankly, to write a male character who sees that as a positive and is attractive.
Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned at the beginning of the tropes, writing these tropes, that the fake romance. I love the one bed. I don't care how many times I see it or read it. And, you know, I used to say that there were some tropes that I didn't like, right? Corinne knows this. I'm like, I don't like enemies to lovers. And then through this podcast and through people pointing out to me books that I've read, I'm like, oh no, that's a lie. I like that one. Oh no, I like that too. What I realize is there are no tropes I dislike. Anything done well, is just done well, right? Except I do stand by the one bed. I think I always like that. But when you said you really wanted to lean in or dive into these, so what is it about these particular ones for you that you're like, these are the tropes? Well, if I'm going to jump in the romance pool or the rom-com pool, these are the ones that stick out for you.
Yeah.
Well, Love Buzz was sort of an insta-love type of exploration. And so in a not-so-perfect world isn't in kind of the opposite of that, which is a slow burn. And so I really wanted to see the development in real time of a relationship on the page. So the slow burn to me is that I think Emily Henry does this so well. Yeah. I think Beatrice is a great example of this, right? Where you are just so full of angst and want as a reader that you're feeling, you know, this right along with them and are wanting it to happen just as much as they do when they finally relent. And so that one to me is always a fun one to read because you get such a payoff at the point that, you know, there is that final interaction. And then you know, one bet I agree. It's funny, I was on a rom-com panel at a conference, and we were asking the audience what their favorite tropes were. And one bet by far was favorite trope. So I think a lot of people agree with you, Kate, about that one. But that's the great thing about romance, you know, is that all of these tropes exist and they're recycled over and over again, but always done in a unique, fresh, fun way. And it's so fun to see what authors do with them and the fresh take that's given to them. But also with the comfort of knowing that those same things are there. So these are all my favorite tropes, truly, that I included in this book.
Oh, that's great.
That's great. Yeah. I feel like you can tell. I am Patty Callahan Henry.
I am Mary Kay Andrews.
I'm Kristen Harbell.
And I'm Christy Whitson Harvey.
Friends in Fiction is led by four longtime friends, the four of us, with more than 75 published books between us.
Through in-depth conversations and interviews, we discuss the books we've written, the books we're reading, and the art of storytelling.
We're here with endless stories to support indie bookstores, authors, librarians, and readers just like you.
We are always seeking innovative ways to introduce dynamic voices and trends in publishing.
On this channel, you will find hundreds of episodes with some of your favorite authors, including the four of us with our new releases, as we reveal the stories behind the stories, offer writing tips, and talk about the creation of novels, memoirs, and nonfiction titles.
So, if you love books and you're curious about the writing world, you are in the right place.
You can listen to Friends and Fiction on any major streaming platform.
So I want to ask about the second book and you as a writer, because I am currently trying to write my book too. And I've talked to a lot of other authors about what it's like. I mean, you start out with this dream of wanting to publish and break through, and you have your debut and it's amazing. And everyone looks at you like, this should just be amazing and flat out. And then you're like, oh, I got to do it again, or I want to do it again, you know? And the other authors I've reached out to, basically, if I'm paraphrasing, book two almost killed me. How did you feel about writing book two as a writer who wants this career?
Yeah, I started writing book two when I was querying book one.
So I was so smart.
Unagented. And honestly, it was a nice distraction because as anyone knows who's gone through the querying process, it is an emotional roller coaster. And you could easily just sit there refreshing your email all day long, just waiting for those responses to come in. So it was a very nice distraction from that process. So I had a decent first draft complete by the time we went on submission. Ultimately, that turned into a two-book deal, which took some of the pressure off. Yes. I would say being able to work on the edits and whatnot through the release of Love Buzz was also really cathartic and helpful, because I could then have something else to focus on. So I think I really, looking back, and I obviously didn't do this intentionally, but having already been in the process and not trying to start the book, while I was in that process, was really, really helpful, because it is easy to get in your head about what are the things readers didn't like about this?
Yes.
Or, you know, what do I need to change from this book? And then it's no longer an authentic process. So there is a little bit of protecting the bubble that I think is necessary, whether it's your second book or your fifth book, and just protecting that creative space and not letting too many voices get in. Otherwise, I think I would just sit and stare at the wall instead of, actually writing.
Which is an important part of being an author. The publishing deal is great, but you have to actually write it. So are you writing a book three, and are you feeling any of that? Or do you feel better equipped to have those tools to, like you said, to have this protective bubble?
So book three is written, drafted, I should say. Still needs a lot of editorial work, being reviewed now, and we'll make some decisions about whether to go on submission. So this will be my second submission process, which is always exciting and scary. Yeah. And then I'm drafting book four. And again, it's very much let me focus on something else so that I'm not focusing on this thing, right? That could give me a lot of stress and anxiety. So a book a year used to feel like a really long time. Now it does not. But, and who knows if I'll be able to maintain that, but that's my goal right now. And I continue to view it, hopefully I always will, but I continue to view it as sort of that, that break from the worry and anticipation. And I think it takes some of the stress off of, you know, having all of your eggs in this one basket of this book that is coming out or that is in the process of coming out and, you know, worrying about how well it's going to do and how much it's going to sell because you're focused on a next project. That's, I think it's actually very healthy for me to be able to have that lined up.
Yes. I could see that. Is, are you staying squarely in the romance or rom-com end of the pool with your next one?
So the next one is, I'd say, a little bit more love buzzy, where it's kind of toes the line of women's fiction and rom-com. And then the fourth book is, which I'm only about 40,000 words in on a first draft. So it's still very, very new, but it is a sort of, I'd say, light mystery romance combination. Ooh, so
I love
my
it.
Agent. I'm sure I'm driving her crazy with just all of the changes in direction from book to book.
But we love
they're
that.
Used to it. Yeah. They're used to it at this point.
But we do know how the industry is, and we hear from lots of authors about their agent or editor going, oh my God, no, like you're in this lane. What are you doing? But I think as readers, we like it. I understand why it's harder for them to market or put it in the box, but
and make a brand. I think
the readers do like that.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we get to the point in the interview where we always have to discuss astrology, Neely. I don't know if you knew that, but it was coming. and I really had to do some real digging through your Instagram to find this. I don't know why I kill myself with this. I could just ask lots of people we don't know, but yet it's I was funny. Determined. I found your husband's birthday. I found your kid's birthday. I know what all their signs are. And I was like, I'm never going to get to Neely's. You're a Scorpio. I believe you're a Scorpio. Am I right?
I am.
Okay. Yeah. I found it. I actually, then it was your 40th birthday post. I'm really going to tell you the level of my stalking. Just so you know. And so I saw the year and then I could do your whole chart. So I actually know. I know. But anyway.
I love this stuff.
Oh, I'm like, is this scaring the Scorpio? Because they're very mysterious.
And secretive.
Yeah.
Private.
Do you relate at all to your sign? And because we
very much so.
Okay, good. All right.
Very much so.
Good. What aspects of it?
I'm fiercely loyal and probably to a fault. I can also be very jealous. I have all of the stinger qualities, I think, as well, of a Scorpio. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, most of my female friends, you know, you find this out after you connect with people, but I'm very much a kind of vibes and energy relationship-based person. I tend to know right away whether, you know, you're going to be my best friend.
Yeah.
Or we just kind of don't mix. And most of my close girlfriends are also Scorpios, and that just sort of happens to be the case. So I always find that super interesting that I have a lot of female Scorpio friends.
That is interesting.
That is. Yeah. Well, you're that's a water sign, and your moon, your insides, you're a Cancer. You have a lot of more water. And your Mercury, which is how you communicate, is Scorpio. So you talk like a Scorpio. It's not just talking, but Mercury is the broader, like how you communicate. Write, everything is. So you've got a lot of Scorpio in there.
Yeah.
What does that mean from a writing perspective? What's your interpretation?
Well, you would just apply. So actually, I have two friends that have Mercury in Scorpio, and they can be.
Let's just
when they want to be, when they're talking, they can come at you. Like those pinchers will come at you. And it's my one friend, I mean, she speaks in very like murderous terms, but she doesn't mean it. Like she was like, you know, everything is like, I will fucking kill you or this person. But that's just like, I just know that about her. That's just, she doesn't mean that any more elevated than someone else being like, oh, you're annoying me. It's got a heightened, the pinchers level.
Yeah.
I don't know. Am I doing it?
When you get fired up. Yeah. Also does not at all, it totally resonates with your like lusty, steamy.
I was going to say the spicy part.
The seductiveness.
They are the sexiest, the Scorpios. I mean.
Yeah.
I think that tracks. I do. I like it.
I love that. Yeah, it's really interesting to learn people's signs too, because it's, you know, you tend to, like I was saying, you attract certain people into your life.
Yes.
And so you start to notice or identify these trends. It's really interesting. But yeah, I'm often, you know, one of my jokes with some of my girlfriends is that there's no chill. And I think that's part of the intensity that you're describing.
Intensity,
with your
that's better. And, thank you. And these two, one of them is a Scorpio. Like, that's her sun sign. And she does have a lot of Scorpio in her chart. But the other one is, her chart is filled with all different other things. It's just her Mercury. Like, I'm like, you just talk like a Scorpio. I love it. It is interesting to us, you know, to just figure things out. You gave us Charlie's birthday.
Yes,
he is a Sagittarius. I did note that. When a character gets a birthday, then I can't get it out of my head to start seeing like their attributes. Oh,
so did he feel like a Sagittarius?
Yes. Okay. He does.
Being attracted to the ambitious, like go for it woman is a big hallmark.
That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my son is a Sagittarius as well, and I see some similarities there.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
I'd like to wrap up with a little lightning round, if that works for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Kate, you want
to? Favorite book as a child?
Ooh, I read a lot of the Choose Your Own Adventure books and Goosebumps.
Goosebumps. Yeah. Good stuff. Okay, how do you prefer to read? E-reader, print, or audio?
In reality, audio is what I do most of because of time constraints, but I like to have a physical copy in bed is usually my favorite way to read.
Yes. Okay, mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Do you write with music, ambient noise, or total silence?
Total silence is...
Right, as much as that exists.
Right.
Yes.
You have children.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I prefer total silence, though. People will have playlists and whatnot for music, and I just would find it too distracting.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Planning, drafting, revising, which one takes up the most time for you? Where do you spend the most time, and which is your favorite?
Well, I'm a pantser, so I don't plan.
Okay.
So revising is where I spend most of my time because that no plan shows up in the first draft.
That comes back around.
It comes back around, yeah.
And your favorite between drafting and revising, I guess?
I'd say the drafting because that's the exciting part to me, and that's part of why I'm a pantser is that it's exciting to me to kind of figure out where the story is going as I'm writing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the first draft is always the special point for me.
Yes. I get that.
So what are you loving right now? Are there books or that you've read and loved recently or TV shows, movies, podcasts, anything?
Yeah. And favorite reality shows. I need
to hear that.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Oh, I could talk about the reality shows all day long. I just one day on Netflix. So like everyone else ripped me apart. Have you guys watched this?
Not yet.
Can I ask, did you read the book? Did you already know how the
I did it not. Ended? Okay. I did not. I had seen a couple of things on TikTok talking about it being sad, but I didn't know exactly what happened. And I purposely protected that until I got to the end because I didn't want any spoilers. But no, I did not read the book first. I only watched the show, which I thought was brilliantly done. Mm-hmm. In terms of reality TV, I'm a big Housewives fan. I watch a lot of them. I'm a big Vanderpump Rules fan. I watch the reality shows too. Yes. I really like those like Survivor and The Challenge. Traitors is amazing.
Did you do Traitors? Yes.
Oh, I love Traitors. That's probably my favorite right now is Traitors. So.
It's such the perfect crossover too. It's all of your favorite characters from other shows. Yeah.
Yeah. So book three has a reality TV element that was really fun because there's a lot of Bravo Easter eggs that I've put
God, give it to me now. I need it now.
Yeah. About that one.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Vanderpump is not quite delivering, I think, because it's having a hard time catching up to where we know things are. But I'm kind of interested in The Valley.
I'll be watching.
I'll be watching
like,
it. But
just like, obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah. It's happening.
And Beverly Hills, I thought this year really came out of nowhere. I was like, this was so boring. And this year they brought it back.
Yeah, Beverly Hills was super interesting this year. And I haven't watched Salt Lake City. I feel like I need to go back and like from the beginning to really appreciate all of the crazy stuff that happened.
I haven't either. No, I haven't either. And I keep telling myself the same thing, but then new stuff comes and I can't go back.
Love it. It's a whole culture, a whole thing that since I don't watch, I just feel endlessly excluded from. I mean, I could jump in, but it's way too late now. It's way too late.
Yeah.
Well, it's such a time suck. You probably shouldn't.
That's exactly. True. That's a fair point. That's a fair point. So,
How about Summer House, Winter House?
That's one of the. I don't watch Summer House, and I don't watch Below Deck. Those are the two that I have never really gotten
okay,
into.
I don't do Below Deck. My husband watches Below Deck by himself. That's how he loves it. I think he just really loves yachts and like wants to go spend our retirement on a yacht. But Summer House, my brother got me into during the pandemic. It's pretty good. Okay. Winter House was terrible. Don't even bother. What about Southern Charm?
I do watch Southern Charm. I have a hard time with it though, because I mean, everyone's badly behaved in every single one of these shows, but the kind of misogyny of Southern Charm is a little too far for me. But yeah, I do watch it. I just sometimes feel a little icky watching it.
Same. That's why I drew the line. I wouldn't go to Southern Hospitality, even as much as I love Leva, but I couldn't do it. Yeah. So anyway, Neely, thank you so much for joining us today. Yeah. In a Not So Perfect World is out now. Yeah, Kate.
That's so good. And if I get a tattoo, which I've been dabbling with in my head, I'm going to give you partial credit because you also have a tattoo parlor scene that I think this might be a sign. So if I get one, I'm going to give a shout out to Neely that pushed me over the edge.
Amazing. Yes, please tag me if you do.
Love it.
Someday. Love it. I think it might happen.
Thank you again.
Thank you so much.